At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive.
Hi, welcome to the Table Talk podcast, and we are excited today to have two of our pharmacists joining us today. I think both of you have been on the podcast before, but we will go ahead and have you reintroduce yourselves. So let's start with Lindsay. Why don't you tell us where you're from and what you're passionate about?
My name is Lindsay Dalton. I am in Ohio, and I especially love talking to women who are just leading very busy lives, very stressed, they're feeling tired all the time, and helping them deal with that stress in a more manageable way.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. And we have Maria from the South.
Thank you, Melody, for having me. My name is Maria Faruqi, and I am a community pharmacist as well as a pharmacist with Farm to Table. And I really enjoy giving nuggets of information to my clients at the community pharmacy, what else they can do to modify their lifestyle besides taking the medications that they're taking. So I'm a pharmacist. I love studying about medications, but I don't think there's a medication for every need that we have.
Right. Yeah. And addressing the root cause. That's why we're here. That's why our team is, all the people that have come together really is about finding different solutions, because we know that the healthcare system is broken and we've just been challenged. And I think eczema is one of those situations where we know there's not easy answers. And I don't know why, but I swear every time I get on a plane, I am like walking down the aisle and I see these children's faces with eczema. And I'm just like, wait, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about this. So this is like, now you're to record this. And when I get on that plane, I'm be like, listen, you don't know me, I don't know you, but here's this podcast. Could you please listen to it? Maybe it's because the winter brings out more of it. I don't know, or the dry air at the airport. I don't know, but
thin air is so important with eczema.
Yes, like there's a lot of times where I'm traveling and I see kids and I'm just like, oh man, I wish they knew this answer. Or even there's a group of pharmacists online that there's like a mom's group. And I think like all the time people are asking the question, like they're showing pictures of their kid's skin and asking the question of what to do about this. So I think this topic is just super important. It seems to come up all of the time. So Lindsay, why don't you tell us a little bit about like what the conventional process is? Like what if people go to the doctor and the doctor says, yes, this is eczema, like where do they start with conventional medicine?
Yeah. So most of the time, the doctors are going to be prescribing a topical steroid cream. You can get some hydrocortisone over the counter, but a lot of times they're going to need a higher strength, a prescription strength. So they'll use a steroid that's just going to help with the itch, help with the inflammation, kind of calm the immune response where they're applying that cream. Sometimes that doesn't work and they're going to escalate the cream options. There are creams that are called calcineurin inhibitors. These are like tacrolimus. Vitamin D analogs are another group of creams that can be prescribed, like calcipotriene. But really, these creams are kind of doing the same thing. They're just decreasing that overactive immune response at the site. These creams don't work for everyone. Sometimes they do if they have a more severe case, if the eczema is covering locations where, like the scalp, where it's hard to get a cream in there, or more sensitive issues where you're not supposed to apply the steroid creams. They might go to systemic options where you're taking a pill to help decrease the immune response. These immunomodulating agents, methotrexate is a really common one. Cyclosporine is one that's sometimes used. And these medications aren't just decreasing the immune response for the eczema. These are decreasing your immune response in general. Taking these medications, they are going to predispose you to other infections. You might get sick more easily. You might pick up some more opportunistic infections. And you do really have to be monitored pretty closely with these medications as well, because some of them do have some pretty harsh side effects that come with them, especially methotrexate and liver toxicity. So it definitely is going to require more frequent follow-up than people are probably used to. And sometimes these medications don't work for everyone either. So they're even escalating the treatment even further and getting injectable medications. And the same with the oral medications, these are just going to decrease your immune response even more. And so you might be injecting them only twice a month, but you are still going to be predisposed to these infections and these opportunistic infections.
Thanks for that. I know that there's so much there that we could dive into, but we definitely want to get more into the how do we not use that laundry list of medications and have to go down that process. But just to circle back to what eczema is, we know that eczema is a chronic inflammatory condition of the skin. So it affects both adults and children. Oftentimes we do see it in children because the microbiome in the gut in children is actually when we're born, the baby's gut is leaky. And then over that first, and by leaky, we mean more permeable. And so over the first year of life, as they're getting exposed to the new microbes and things around them, that tends to seal off. But unfortunately, in today's world and our exposure to toxins, our mom's bacteria not being what it should be, passed down from generations and generations of antibiotic use and the exposure to toxins and pesticides and the eating, you know, diets that are different, you know, shifting that microbiome, like we're not getting the same strains passed on from mom to baby as we once were. And so that's been a challenge. And that definitely can contribute to why kids are not only developing allergies, but also eczema and some of these other allergic type disorders. And so I think that brings back to like, okay, what are we going to do about it differently? We know that eczema can be some of the first signs of this like process of developing these allergic disorders and developing food allergies or even asthma. And so as we continue to probe the immune system and the immune system stay inflamed, we sort of continue to march towards this worsening of the immune response. So Mario, why don't you tell us a little bit about how do we do this differently? What does it look like when we're talking of functional medicine or like a holistic approach to addressing eczema?
So sure, we can always think of our gut. Gut health is important. But if we want to use the functional medicine lens of understanding eczema, it's important to address the gut first. But when I talk to people and they would like to look at the gut health or do stool testing, I think there's some lower hanging fruits that we can look at that we can do today and now and this week before we do other things. So most importantly is having a cleaner diet. So our children's food needs to be much more whole food, wholesome, more of an anti-inflammatory component to it, adding fruits and vegetables, adding more colorful diet, having a rainbow colors array of food on your plate. Stress management. So I think this is the number one in my book, because when a young mom has children with eczema and she's pretty stressed, so that takes the stress on the child as well, because clearly there's something wrong with the skin. They're itchy, they're not sleeping. And this causes a cycle where the mother's stress is being imposed on the child is stressed, and that furthermore increases the inflammation because, mind you, eczema is a systemic inflammation, right? It's not an inflammation of just the skin. I would like people to understand it's a systemic chronic condition and the inflammation is within. So imagine the fire is raging within, not just on the skin. So clean diet, stress management, of course, that includes adequate amount of sleep and then including supplements. So there are some key targeted supplements. Unfortunately, we don't have certain amount of nutrients that we may need to control eczema, such as omega-3. Right. So unless you live near the ocean and you're eating fish on a daily basis, I know I don't eat fish on a daily basis. So I know I need to include omega-3 as a supplement in my diet for a better skin health. Turmeric. So that's one of the two key ones that I usually recommend. Of course, there are many. So if you want to use a functional medicine lens approach, really what we can do start today is basically having a cleaner diet, managing our stress, adequate sleep, and maybe perhaps look at some supplements.
let's dive into the gut a little bit more. And Lindsay, when you want to chime in with your story, feel free to share that. My story with my daughter is that I had her and like, I didn't really know upfront that I had gut imbalances or microbiome imbalances when I was pregnant, seemed pretty fine. But then the stress of having the baby, and I've told that story before on here, caused me to have some GI issues. Well, then she started to develop eczema and she started to develop food allergies, colicky things. And so there was this connection between what was going on in my gut and what was going on in her, and I was nursing her. And also the fact that her gut started with the bacteria that was in my gut in that process of passing that on through the birthing process. She started probably presenting with eczema when she was about maybe 8 to 9 months old, when we started introducing more whole foods, and found that dairy was really one of her triggers for eczema. And so we took like dairy that wasn't fermented. So she seemed to be fine with fermented dairy for the most part. And so she could do like a whole milk yogurt or something like that. But when it was not fermented, fermentation breaks down more of the proteins in a substance. So whether you're fermenting dairy or you're fermenting wheat with sourdough or you're fermenting cabbage with kimchi, like more of the, that's probably not as good of an example because there's not as much protein in that. But for the others, you're breaking down proteins and that makes them less allergenic. So some people, like celiac people, are absolutely still going to react to sourdough bread. But for other people, they may be able to tolerate that more depending on what their allergic reaction or their level of allergy looks like. So for her, she was able to tolerate that. When she got closer to one and we were switching to, I think we did do some goat milk yogurts and cheeses, but when she got closer to one and we were coming off of nursing, we actually did goat milk because goat milk doesn't have the same casein protein that dairy milk does. So it's just an example of how a food protein could be triggering this immune reaction. So all the time while we're changing diet using goat milk and goat cheese, we're also addressing the microbiome. So we're doing probiotics. We're making sure her omega-3 status is good. So there are supplements that you can even use in little ones that has omega-3s. Sometimes if they have some GERD or reflux, we have to be a little careful about the omega-3 supplementation because sometimes it can worsen that. So I don't generally do it to like little ones that are still getting that esophageal sphincter to be more tight. The early days that those omegas can make things worse, but some kids may tolerate it fine. But if they're on this food allergy intolerance spectrum, they've probably got a little colic and reflux going on anyways. So just something to be cautious about. But vitamin D status is really important. So that's also something that can be simple, is getting your vitamin D checked. Now, do we really check an infant's vitamin D level? Probably not, but we can give them an appropriate dose that we know is based on, I think most infants can do 400 IUs of vitamin D based on the labels of the package that you're looking at. We sometimes used a product that we have that's drops, but we would do it like a drop every other day or something like that to make sure that they were getting an appropriate amount. So mom's omega-3 status and mom's vitamin D status during pregnancy can also make a big impact on the risk for eczema and allergies and asthma and all of this ectopic type allergic disorders. So that's something to think about if you're pregnant, making sure that you have adequate levels yourself. Those can be easily tested. If you're getting blood work while you're pregnant, you can easily have a vitamin D level test. You can also easily have a omega-3 index checked at either LabCorp or Quest or one of the big labs. So it just has to be ordered and coded appropriately to have insurance be able to support that. There's actual studies that talk about kids born in like the spring being more at risk for some of these disorders because of mom being in the winter months during pregnancy and having lower amounts of these, especially the vitamin D nutrient. So optimizing that is really important. But the probiotic piece is the piece I was getting to. And so we know, and we actually have a whole blog post we can link on probiotics and eczema, but there's definitely a connection between this microbiome piece. We talked about the intestinal permeability piece. We have to make sure that the probiotics are there to help seal those tight junctions of those junctions in the gut and not have the immune system so overreacting. Because when we have that leaky gut picture, we get these larger proteins going through into the bloodstream and our immune system is just on this high high alert. And that's really what's triggering this IgG mediated, you know, there's other components besides that, but this food sensitivity mediated allergic response. And sometimes it's delayed too, which I think is the challenge, is that you could eat this product like a week ago or even 3 days ago, and then the eczema starts to flare up. It's not instantaneous like it is with IgE mediated food allergies that are, as soon as someone congests something, they have this reaction. So I think that's the challenge sometimes for parents, is they're like, I pulled this out, and they're like, they pulled it out for a day and they're like, it's not getting better, but it does take a little bit of time to make that happen. So with my daughter being so young, we didn't necessarily do any food sensitivity testing because she was a little, but we were pulling out some allergens. But there's some providers out there that do muscle testing. And I know like there's varying opinions on muscle testing. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced muscle testing, but with a chiropractor. But for us, like that was a game changer, because it was like, okay, here's what we think. We're sort of narrowing down, because you've got this whole kitchen of things that I'm eating and then nursing her and then the things that she's eating. And so for that process to say, okay, we think it's these three triggers, that makes your life as a parent like so much less stressful, right? To be able to say, I think it's dairy and egg and almond or something that are her triggers. So for infants, I found that to be helpful. Again, like I think different modalities offer different things for people, and whatever you believe about it may be how impactful it can be for you. But the nice thing about some things like that is there's no risk, right? There's no risk to like muscle testing, or unless someone's telling you to pull out 50 things in your diet and then your like microbiome gets depleted, that's a whole other story. But normally it's not the case. Normally it's a few things and you trial it for a while and see how it works. But for her, it was definitely a game changer in figuring out which things do we need to avoid while we're working on addressing the microbiome. So Lindsay, you want to talk about from an adult perspective what your experience was? But her eczema went away, I guess I should say, with the changes and addressing it. There's always some flare-ups sometimes with like immune system stimulation. So I find kids that have like a virus like can stimulate a flare-up. A vaccine can stimulate a flare-up because you're like taking your immune system and putting it on more heightened response at that point. So just be mindful of those things and don't flip out. I think sometimes people are like, oh my goodness, what food did I feed them? And, you know, sort of worrying about that component. But it's like, well, your kid has a cold, and that's probably why their eczema is flaring a little bit. But yeah, so what about adults? What do you think, like from a gut perspective, your go-tos are?
It all goes back to the immune system. Like I said before, and what the conventional treatments were doing, they were dampening that immune response. So we're doing the same thing in functional medicine. We're just going about it in a completely different way. We have this heightened immune response because we have this leaky gut, and our immune system is responding to something. But what we have to do is figure out what that something is. So in my experience, it was food. And so I did a food sensitivity test. And sometimes I think these food sensitivity tests are kind of controversial among practitioners. Some people say like, you're always going to get false positives, like they're not going to tell you anything. But in my case, that's literally what helped control my eczema. I did a food sensitivity test, and I could have cut out all the bad things. I was trying to cut out all the bad things before I did it. But for me, it was sesame. And I would never, ever have thought to cut out sesame. I was eating everything but the bagel seasoning every single day. And that is literally sesame. Wow. So it's like, of course, you're eating this every day. You're going to keep flaring. Your immune response is going to be going crazy. And it was. And so I cut out the foods I was sensitive to and started on a gut healing protocol. And within weeks, it was so much better. Within, I would say, 2 months, it was almost completely cleared. So it really is just about looking for those triggers. And then also, like we had mentioned before, supporting the skin health and the integrity of that, of the skin barrier with the omegas. I found that zinc is a really good one to support the skin. Vitamin mm-hmm. A is a good one too. Coming at it just from this supportive measure. And maybe you do have some kind of dysbiosis that you need to work on at the same time and work on healing that gut barrier with collagen and gelatin. Make your kids some gelatin gummies. They'll love that. They'll scarf those down.
I haven't made those in a while. I used to make them all the time and my kids would love it. You can even put like tart cherry juice in and do them like in the evening to help them sort of like calm down. So I probably need to come back to that because we need some calming around here in the evening.
So Lindsay, I'm curious to know, I'm sure listeners are curious to know too, how did you cut out sesame? Where was it in your diet?
I kid you not, it was everywhere. So I was eating the Trader Joe's, everything but the bagel seasoning on my breakfast every morning. So I sadly had to cut that out. And then I was eating Perfect bars. I had no idea. Yeah, those have sesame oil in them. And then making stir fry, putting sesame oil in the stir fry. It was everywhere. And I didn't realize how much I was eating.
Yeah. But you were saying like, well, sesame is such a tiny seed, right? And it's such a tiny amount. It's not like you're eating a bowl of sesame seed.
Yeah.
Right.
This is like how a little tiny thing can trigger your whole system.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Sesame in general has become a, like it's on the list of like the top allergens now that they have to like label foods for and things. It's definitely become more allergenic as our guts become more leaky and we start to react to things even as a whole society. Awesome. I think I've seen this in my patients. I also have, I know that we're talking about eczema specifically, but from a skin disorder standpoint, I had a psoriasis patient that was having flare-ups and different plaques and things that were like he had already been removing some of the big triggers like dairy and wheat and egg and based on some past food sensitivity tests, but he had gone to a practitioner and the practitioner had just told him to remove what showed up on his first test. His eczema went away or his psoriasis plaques went away and he was fine for a year and then started to have these symptoms again. And he's like, well, I'm still, I removed all these foods. Like, what do I do? Well, the problem was that he didn't, with that first practitioner, do any kind of gut healing protocol. It was all just remove the food. And so I think the big piece of what we want to communicate about any allergic type skin reaction that when we're removing the foods, we also have to be doing other work to make sure that we're not just going to develop another food sensitivity to other things. Because if our gut is permeable and we're starting to eat other things in place of those things we took out, over time, we're going to develop a food sensitivity to some of those things too, which is brings me to the point of making sure that whatever food sensitivity test that you do is not just an IgG by itself test, because that is ultimately going to be just like a food diary. It's just going to, if your gut is leaky, it's just going to say, these are all the foods they are eating and we're reacting to. But the immune system is a lot more complex than that. And there's complement, there's IgE4, there's all kinds of different things that are happening in the immune system that can either make the reaction worse in the case of complement, or it can sort of like mute the reaction in a way so you might not actually be as sensitive as it might look. So an IgG only test sometimes gives us a lot of false positives. So we don't want to make you avoid 20 foods when actually maybe be only like reacting to 5 to 10 or less than 10. And so that's really why working with a practitioner, making sure that you are doing a food sensitivity test that is going to look beyond just the IgG and those immune complexes is going to be really important. And then there's also some testing with the food sensitivity testing that also gives us like a gut barrier assessment. So you can actually, from just a finger prick, also see zonulin, another barrier protein called occludin, and then even antibodies to yeast, because yeast sometimes is a trigger for that intestinal permeability. So zonulin is a protein that's synthesized in the intestines, but also the liver cells, but it's a key marker for intestinal permeability. And it's really like how practitioners can even tell if you have this intestinal permeability. So elevated zonulin levels can be seen in skin disorders, in autoimmune conditions, in things like celiac and even just glucose intolerance or patients that are insulin resistant and obese. And so it's a protein that really can open those tight junction proteins. And so we want to make sure that we don't trigger the zonulin release with these foods. But a lot of zonulin protein assays sometimes can have cross-reactivity, and that can be a challenge, and different ways of measuring it aren't necessarily the best. And so we want to make sure we're using something that has the ability to have good reliability. But then occludin is another protein that we can see on some of these assessments that sort of comes after the zonulin triggers, and elevated levels also are associated with sort of the progression of this intestinal permeability. So having a test that can look at those things and your food sensitivities can really be a game changer for addressing this intestinal permeability and getting things in check. And then the last one that's nice to look at is LPS. And LPS is lipopolysaccharides. And it's on the surface of almost all gram-negative bacteria, but it produces endotoxins. And those endotoxins are what triggers more damage to the gut epithelial tissue, or the gut tissue that's the lining of the gut. So it also crosses the blood-brain barrier and linked to all kinds of things like thyroid disorders and other autoimmune triggers. So really, like, I find sometimes food, like we talked about the progression at the beginning, but the food sensitivity testing early on can really help you like rein in. If you have these like skin manifestations like eczema, it can really sort of like open your eyes at the beginning to like, wow, if I hadn't removed, like Lindsay, if you hadn't removed sesame, what would your health look like now? Would you have an autoimmune disorder, or would you, and if that hadn't been sort of like a sign. So it's like your body is telling you something is wrong here, and we have to listen to that signal and make sure that we're taking good measures to address that in the health. And it's just so unfortunate that our society is not looking at that, right? We're not addressing this in our clinics, and you're having to go through PAs and look at these requests for all these auto or immune like modulating agents for people, when the answer might just be changing your diet, taking some probiotics, healing the gut, like drinking collagen. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's crazy to me that some of this stuff is so simple, yet it costs our healthcare system all kinds of money every year.
Would you recommend, Melody, people exploring or challenging themselves with an elimination diet before taking any testing?
That's a good question. I know a lot of people, when they come to me, they are frustrated, right? They are like ready to be like healed 2 weeks ago, right? They aren't wanting to wait a long time. And so I think for adults that are having these skin conditions, that is probably best to do food sensitivity testing earlier than later. And with a caveat, like sometimes if they've got a lot of gut symptoms going on, like they're like SIBO, bloated, they're having a lot of constipation and diarrhea, sometimes I will work on the gut with the removing pathogens, rebalancing the microbiome before we do some food sensitivity testing, because I think it can be overwhelming to people to like have to significantly modify their diet and do a regimen of supplements and things at the same time. But that being said, I think if you do them together, that sometimes you can get further faster. But if you're not experiencing crazy GI symptoms and you want to get further faster, essentially, like I think testing and knowing like what exactly to pull out. Because in Lindsay's case, like if she had just kept doing a standard Whole 30 diet, she'd been eating everything bagel seasoning like all day long and not getting better. And so I think like even my psoriasis patient, if I can remember, like his was like some random vegetables and some like fish. Like I think he was eating white fish and cod showed up on his food sensitivity. And even some of the fish, like if you think about people taking omegas and fish oil, like if we're reacting to a certain type of fish, we also might be supplementing with something that's also triggering the immune system. So it's one of those things where it can be expensive, and they have a consult and then they're like, okay, well, you're asking me to pay another $400 to do a food sensitivity test. But I just think that time is money no matter where you are. And if you're a parent and you're trying to like navigate all of this, I mean, it is, if some of them are available finger sticks, so that can be done in younger kids. I will say with the kids, it's a little bit more difficult to do finger sticks and things, but it may save, again, time and like sleep and all of those things. But the muscle testing could be an option for kids too, if they're working with a chiropractor or a practitioner that does that. But I mean, for an adult, if they're willing to just try a Whole 30 for a month, there's so many resources out there for doing Whole 30. I mean, Lindsay, do you want to talk about that a little bit? I know you've been a Whole 30 coach, and that might be a place to start for some people if they think the trigger is one of the big ones.
Whole 30 is basically removing the major inflammatory foods from the diet for 30 days. So grains, the whole class of grains, not just wheat or gluten, dairy, the inflammatory seed oils, any added sugar. So that's even like honey, agave, any added sugar, all of the artificial sweeteners. You're basically just eating a whole foods diet just without the grains and the dairy. And you do this for 30 days. Your immune system kind of gets a reset. And then you sort of systematically reintroduce these foods back into your diet after the 30 days is over. And this is where you have to be just really in tune with your body. Like, I'm going to eat dairy on this day and then go back to my whole 30 diet for a couple days, because we do have these delayed responses sometimes, and just really see how I feel. Did these symptoms come back over these 3 days after I ate dairy, or was I completely fine? And then after you reintroduce dairy, then you're going to reintroduce grains and do the same thing. And this is going to kind of help you pinpoint if any of those major categories of foods are causing you any issues.
Yeah. So it just takes a longer time to figure out when you're trying to do it on your own. And if it's something random like the sesame, or for some people, it might be chocolate and they're drinking chocolate protein shakes, even though they're vegan and clean, you know, you just don't know until you see the data. So I think most people are going to benefit from the food sensitivity test, but if budget is limited, like absolutely doing elimination diet can definitely still get you some answers.
So what would you recommend, say, for breakfast? Most typical breakfast are cereal and milk, which is both inflammatory food. And then you may say, okay, well, I'll just add an omelet and egg. Egg could also be an inflammatory food too. So what kind of recommendation would you make for somebody for breakfast, just to start off that day?
Yeah, I like to do turkey sausage in the morning and have it with some sort of vegetable. So sometimes I'll roast broccoli or Brussels sprouts and have that with some turkey sausage and some fruit. You could always do, I know you can't do dairy, but you could always do like a coconut yogurt and mix in some protein powder. It almost makes it like a pudding. I really enjoy that in the morning, even for a snack.
I also think people can like rethink their breakfast as like, we don't have to eat an American breakfast in the morning. So when I was doing Whole30 and some of my gut healing work, I would just eat leftovers from dinner for breakfast. So if it was like roasted vegetables and maybe like some meat and, you know, a potato, like a sweet potato, or sometimes I'll have soup for breakfast. If we, like I was taking to work, like we make this like white potato soup. We actually have the link on the blog. It came from another blog that we just like simplified, but we'll have like this white sweet potato soup with turkey in it. And that's probably better than most of the American things you could eat for breakfast anyways. So I think sometimes people just have to reframe their thoughts on what breakfast is and utilize some of their other foods that they love. So awesome. Well, thanks so much for being on here. So in summary here, we've talked a lot about gut inflammation and intestinal permeability, which we've talked about on the podcast before. So we can link back to other episodes as well. So some of those triggers and of abnormal gut flora, we talked about the yeast overgrowth can be a trigger. People using antibiotics or steroids, even birth control pills, can upset the microbiome and change the bugs that live there. And so ultimately, this intestinal permeability is an issue and what is sort of the driver of this immune response that we see with eczema and even other autoimmune conditions. Ultimately healing that through the use of probiotic strains. There's lots of different data on different probiotic strains, but getting butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid, which is like a postbiotic, to be produced by these probiotic strains. There's the Fecalis bacterium, our butyrate producers, Akkermansia helps maintain a healthy mucosal lining. And sometimes it's not actually the strain that you take. It's more like there's data on specific strains and healing intestinal permeability, but as far as like supporting the microbiome, so your commensal bacteria can produce butyrate. And so you've got this like flourishing of the microbiome, and spore-based probiotics can be a great way to do that, as well as even like we talked about collagen, even serum-derived bovine immunoglobulins can be helpful in healing. And sometimes there's like products that combine that with spore-based probiotics to sort of have both sides of the microbiome shift and the calming of the immune system. So there's a lot of different things that we can do from a gut healing standpoint. But I think like testing definitely helps us to figure out the triggers, whether it's the gut triggers with the stool test or the allergy triggers when we're talking about the foods, and even identifying, do we have intestinal permeability going on? So I think Maria talked about stress and anti-inflammatory nutrients and making sure like we're incorporating those into our diet. Glutamine, we didn't talk too much about glutamine, but that's definitely one that's on the list of things that helps to restore the tight junctions alongside that zinc and collagen and the proteins. Amino acids are so important. I think sometimes when people start to remove so many foods, they forget that they need protein and to heal, right? And no matter what we're dealing with, protein is broken down into amino acids, and that's the building block of everything that we've got going on in our bodies. And so we have to make sure that we're getting adequate protein in our diet. So anything else you guys want to add?
Just wanted to say that addressing eczema in early childhood is super important because, of course, like Lindsay said, some kind of a food allergy component. And some children also go on to develop asthma, and both food allergies and asthma can be fatal. Eczema may not be fatal, but it doesn't seem fatal, right? But as asthma, as well as food allergy, can be a fatal condition. Mm-hmm. So addressing eczema earlier on is super important. It may not be a full-blown body eczema, but even if you have seen a patch, explore a patch. I know as a child, I had like a small patch on my face. I didn't think of it much, but addressing that was important for me as well. I usually tell parents, if you see any eczema, address it as soon as you can.
And I think along those lines too, parenthood is stressful. I mean, you guys know this, like you see something and you're like, oh my goodness, I feel, you know, you're blaming yourself for something. Like I introduced this food too early or whatever, which obviously we talk a lot about stress and how stress impacts our health. And so when we're helping our children, just remember that like, these are tools and we can't like control everything. And so if you need help, like ask for help and ask for guidance, and trying to do it by yourself sometimes is really difficult. I know there's times where like my kids would get a little sick and then they've got like what looks like eczema around their face. And I'm like, was it eczema? Is it the snot? When you're trying to decide like what is causing whatever rash that you're experiencing. I can't even imagine being a dermatologist. People post these pictures all the time on different Facebook groups. Like, what is this? What is this? And like, who knows? All looks the same. Or they come up to the pharmacy. I don't know if you guys have had that where they whip out their like rash or something. And you're just like, okay.
It's really heartbreaking to see parents struggling, you know, because children can't sleep. They're miserable. The school is sending them letters like, hey, do something about this. And
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of these kids with severe eczema, and they have it all over their back. They're like not sleeping. And so you see them even then getting like prescriptions for sleeping things or like taking Benadryl at night to make their kids sleep. And it's like, all of this is just perpetuating this like worsening of the immune response if we're not addressing the root cause. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we hopefully have hit that nail home that we should be addressing the root cause in eczema. And a lot of times it starts in the gut, which probably I would say 99% of the time there's some trigger going on, whether it's a microbe or a intestinal permeability food situations. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I look forward to our next chat. Bye.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam. At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive.